"Oh, I'm not here for the museum," I said brightly, confirming her impression that a village somewhere back in the States was missing its idiot. "I'm here for the Vaughan Collection." "This is the Vaughan Collection." I knew I should have had that extra cup of coffee before leaving my flat. I thought of pretending that I didn't speak English, but it was a little too late for that. "Sorry," I said, with that super ingratiating smile that works on Americans but falls flat in the British Isles. "I didn't mean the art collection. I meant the documentary collection. The archives. I spoke to your archivist?" I'm not sure why it came out as a question. After all, if I didn't know whether I'd spoken to the archivist, she surely wouldn't know either. From the look on the receptionist's face, she seemed to share this opinion. Trying a different tack, I said more assertively, "I was told the archives were open between 1 and 6 on Saturdays." Dismissing me as a bad job, the receptionist jerked her head to the right. "Straight through down the stairs at the back if you want to see the museum. It'll be £4. The fact that she said this without pausing to draw breath rendered the performance even more impressive. "I'll be sure to keep my eyes shut as I go." This earned me another fishy stare. Deeming it wiser to quit while I was ahead, I hoisted my bag higher on my shoulder and headed in the direction the receptionist had indicated. The caryatids arrayed on either side of the door looked down on my brown wool pants and baggy green barber jacket with a decided sneer. I don't know what they were so supercilious about. Their marble draperies were a good 2,000 years out of fashion. Dotted with little glass cases, the room beyond must have been a ballroom or something equally grand once upon a time, when Vaughan House was still inhabited by genuine Vaughans, rather than the remnants of their art collection and a scraggle of hardcore art historians and scruffy tourists. You could have fit 5 of my flat into it and still had room for a good-sized coffee shop. With a fine disregard for atmosphere, the curators had plunked a series of glass and chrome display cases throughout the room, each containing a motley collection of personal effects of long-deceased Vaughans. In the largest case, in the very center of the room, the curators had displayed the pièce de résistance, an impressive collection of Edwardian underwear, from lace-edged drawers large enough to swathe the backside of a baby elephant, to a pair of stays that looked like they might have been used to tow the Queen Mary back into port. Next to them, the curators had helpfully positioned a sepia photograph of a formidable dowager, with a waist cinched into nothingness and a bosom that could smother a small city. With 4 months of fish and chips weighing heavily on my midriff, I cast a speculative eye over the stays. Unfortunately, I didn't think they would fit under my going-out pants, which were designed for something a bit lighter in the way of undergarments. I wondered what the curators of museums would be displaying 100 years hence. Would we have glass cases filled with fire engine red thongs and leopard print bras, along with a carefully printed white card explaining their socio-cultural significance? The gentleman who occupied the better part of one wall seemed to share my qualms. His gaze was fixed upon the underwear display with a decidedly jaundiced air. He had been painted, according to the conceit of the time, in a classical wasteland, with a broken pillar wedged beneath one elbow and vague suggestions of a decaying Roman temple in the background. It was an evening scene, in which the rich black brocade of his coat would have blended with the deep indigo of the night sky, if not for the silver threads that ran through the weave like condensed moonlight. The entire ensemble had a supernatural shimmer, reminiscent of old-fashioned ghost stories, featuring family phantoms. Even with all the shimmer and silver, it wasn't the eerie glow of his attire that first caught my eye, but his face. I would be lying if I said it was a handsome face. The nose was too long, the better for looking down at you, I suppose, and the lips were too thin. There were interesting hollows beneath his sharp cheekbones and paunches beneath his eyes, not unlike those one sees in pictures of the Duke of Windsor, the last word in aristocratic dissipation. His thin lips were curved in a cynical half-smile, and the sideways slant of the eyes suggested that he had just noticed something that both appalled and amused him, or amused him because it appalled him. Either way, I wanted to be let in on the